Recently, we've been hearing a lot about horrific conditions in the Chinese factories where many of our consumer electronics are made. But unfortunately, the problems don't end there. In an article in the March-April issue of Mother Jones magazine, human rights reporter Mac McClellan looks at what it's like to work in one of the shipping facilities in this country, where not just electronics, but also everything you buy online is packed and shipped, and it's not a pretty picture. Mac McClellan went undercover to research her article called Shelf Lives, My Brief, Back-Breaking, Rage-Inducing, Low-Paying, Dildo-Packing Time Inside the Online Shipping Machine. I'm very pleased to welcome her back to our show. Hello.
Hello.
You will last here for your book about Burma for us. Surrender is out of the question, a story from Burma's never-ending war. And you've also reported from Haiti, Uganda, Congo. What got you interested in this story about conditions in the shipping facilities in the United States?
It actually started as sort of an accident last year. I was reporting a story in Ohio about something else, and I visited one of these fulfillment centers because one of my exes worked there, actually, and I just went to visit it. And when I saw it, I realized how, you know, sort of degrading the conditions were for the people who worked there. And when I got back to San Francisco, you know, I was talking to my editors, we ended up including some information about that warehouse that I was in the Ohio feature. And we decided that since it's actually a very widespread phenomenon, the way these things are run, it should be a piece all on its own.
Mail order fulfillment houses have been around for a long time. Are these new places, which deal mostly with online orders, all that different?
You know, I never worked in a mail order fulfillment center. I think that right now the model is, you know, super fast because it has to be so fast and because it has to be basically free, right? When you try to charge people for shipping, they do tests, and it does actually cause a lot of order abandonment. When people go online to order things, if they find out they have to pay for shipping, they will just, you know, empty their cart. So it's important to consumers to not have to pay for shipping. So I think the combination of the super fast speed, you know, you expect these products to arrive at your house in 36 hours. So the people who are in charge of moving them obviously have to move very, very quickly. And the fact that it's not a service that you pay for. So the people who are doing that labor, you know, there's not a lot of room for them to be making a lot of money. That I think it's the combination of both those things that makes it so bad.
It's cost one of the reasons that it's located in the United States, because these jobs can't be outsourced. The shipping all those cartons from China or wherever would just be too expensive.
Right. Well, you need to have these fulfillment centers in places relatively close to the people that they're going to, that the orders are going to.
So, well, you mentioned Ohio. Is that,
yeah.
Where are most of these giant warehouses located? Are there certain areas that they're more likely to be?
Oh, they are all over the country. They're everywhere. I don't know if there's one in every state, but I definitely know that there are some in many states. So they're spread out all over the place.
Well, how do you go about getting a job in one of these places? Did you have or need any experience in the type of work?
No, you know, and I used to work in a warehouse. I worked for a moving company for like 5 years, and so I was kind of excited, you know, when my editor sent me to get this job. I was like, I'm going to tell them I worked in a warehouse. They're going to be really impressed. But in fact, it's kind of like, you know, it's a very mass-produced kind of like, it's like a cattle call sort of experience more than like an actual application. You walk in, there are a whole bunch of other people at, you know, they have a separate office where you can apply. And you have to go through a series of computer tests, basically just to confirm that you have not recently been to prison and that you can read. And then somebody hires you.
Well, it begins with a temp agency, doesn't it? Is that because you applied during the holiday season? They only needed workers for a few months? Or are most of the workers hired through temp agencies?
Many of the workers are hired through temp agencies year-round. Definitely way more of them are hired during the holiday season, for sure. So I came in during the holiday rush, but these arrangements with temp agencies are sort of a matter of course. There are varying estimates for what percentage of workers in warehouses like these are temporary, and the estimates are anywhere between, you know, 15% and 40%, depending on what the warehouse is.
Why would a company want to have so many workers be temps? Is it because they can pay them less than permanent workers, not have to deal with benefits like sick days, vacation days, family leave, health insurance?
Absolutely. It's way cheaper, so you can pay them less. And, I mean, in a lot of cases, you know, they make just above minimum wage, and you're not really entitled to ask for raises if you just work on a temporary assignment. You're not, like, legally entitled to decent health care or benefits. We didn't have any paid time off, and you were penalized for any of the time off that you took. You could potentially go to the doctors and not get fired if you brought back a note, but you couldn't expect to be compensated for sick days or anything like that. One of the people who I worked with, who was going through the training with me, had just started training over again because he had recently been fired because he missed a day because his wife had a baby.
So they have to go through the whole training process again?
Yeah, you have to start over. You have to start the application, not only the training, but the application. So you had to go back into the employment office. Well, because these people, you know, you're not really like a person. So, you know, there's no one who knows who you are or cares what your story is, right? It's a matter of sheer numbers. The temp office that hired me was going to go through 4,000 temporary employees between October and December of last year. So nobody knows, you know, who anybody is. So you just have to start over.
What kinds of people were working there? Were any of them career warehouse workers?
Some of them were, yeah. There were some career people there. There were, you know, for the most part, it was people who had lost jobs doing something else. And so this was their new job. So there were some people who were in their 20s and 30s. Most of the people, I would say, were 40 plus. There were people in their 50s and 60s. Some of them were retirees, but mostly the people, you know, when we sit around at lunch, and you only have 29 minutes and 59 seconds to eat lunch, so, you know, we didn't have super in-depth conversations about our personal lives because we didn't have time because we had to eat really quickly and get back to work, but people always ask each other, you know, why are you here? Like, what's the reason that you would be working in conditions like this? And it's not just because it's a warehouse. You know, manual labor jobs and entry-level jobs are important. They're an important part of the economy. People need those jobs. But the conditions under which these particular kinds of centers operate are just way more degrading and, you know, inhumane than they need to be.
You call the place that you worked at Amalgamated Product Giant Shipping Worldwide Incorporated. Should I assume that is not its real name?
That's right. We went like as hyperbolic as possible.
Well, why couldn't you name it? Are you worried about being sued?
Our lawyers had, you know, reviewed the case history, and as it turns out, when a journalist goes to work for a company without disclosing that they're a journalist. You know, I didn't lie to anybody. Nobody asked me. And actually, on my application, you know, they say, what's your current job? And I put my current employer, but so many people need extra jobs and extra income that it, you know, didn't raise any red flags for anyone that I already had a job. So I didn't lie to anybody, but I didn't say, like, by the way, I'm a journalist, so I'm going to write about this. And historically, when a company sues a journalist for doing that, apparently the courts side with the company. And so our lawyers said, you know, it would be better probably to sort of stay out of this and just not name it. Plus, it doesn't really matter, because if we named this one company, it would sort of make it look like just this one company is doing this, when in fact, this is the standard practice in this industry.
Does this facility belong to just one online retailer, or is it run by a company that ships goods for many different online retailers?
Well, there's even the companies that have their own fulfillment centers. Amazon, for example, has their own fulfillment centers. They still contract with other companies to ship other people's goods. So if I was a small business, I could pay Amazon to do my fulfilling. for me. So there's all sorts of different arrangements, but usually even the companies that have their own will do it for other people because this is a big service. It's a big need. You know, people need to pay companies to do all this online order fulfillment because people buy so much stuff online now.
You call it a 3PL, a third-party logistics contractor.
That's right. That's like the industry lingo. So third-party logistics are, you know, you have products you need to ship. So Amazon does their own, but in most cases. But Walmart, for example, you know, you need to hire someone who's really good at shipping stuff. And your Walmart, you know, that's not your specialty, so you hire a third-party logistics contractor. The third-party logistics contractor hires a temp organization, and those people, you know, cycle the employees through. So there's several levels of removal, really, from the conditions. So it's kind of easy for nobody to take responsibility in that setup for what's going on inside them.
My guest is Mac McClelland, who's written an article called Shelf Lives. It's in the current issue of Mother Jones magazine. So tell us a bit about the place you call Amalgamated Product Giant Shipping Worldwide Incorporated. How big is the place and how many people work there?
It's several hundred thousand square feet. So these warehouses, you know, some of them can be smaller, but they can also be in the range of 700, 800,000 square feet. I mean, they're almost unfathomably huge. It could take you 20 minutes to sort of jog from one side to the middle of the other side. They're really, really big. This particular warehouse had 3,000 workers in it.
Did you have a job title?
I did. I was a picker. That's what people who have to actually get the items. Everything is broken down. You know, it's like an assembly line. Everything is broken down into the smallest possible, you know, little labor tasks for maximum efficiency. So pickers are the people who, when you click, you know, place my order online, it will, the items that you get pop up on a little scanner, like this little computerized scanner that the pickers are holding, and it tells them a section of the warehouse and on what shelf, what floor, what level, what bin. You know, it has, I mean, there's millions of items in here.
So you could be running all over the place.
Yeah, they estimated that in that particular warehouse, the pickers ran from 10 to 14 miles a day in a shift in order to...
So it's good for your health.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. Actually, honestly, when they gave me that job, you know, I'm a little high-strung, and so when they gave me that job instead of... Because there's another job that I could have gotten, which is where you stand perfectly still for 10.5 hours a day, and as conveyor, you know, as a conveyor line brings boxes past you, you just tape it shut just over and over and over again, and I understand that that is, like, you know, really boring and terrible on your wrist. So when they gave me the running job, I was kind of excited. But, you know, you're on concrete, really cold or really hot in the summertime because there's not really temperature control in these warehouses, on concrete, and the speed at which you have to move for 10.5 hours is a long, 10.5 hours is a long time to be speed walking, you know. So, I mean, speed walking for 2 hours or maybe even 4 hours, I think, would be really, you know, sort of refreshing. But 10.5 hours is too long.
So how long did you work a day?
10.5 hours were our shifts.
There are no 8-hour days, no 40-hour weeks. And how much were you paid an hour?
I was hired at $11.50.
And did you get any breaks? You mentioned that you had your lunch was actually determined in terms of seconds.
Yeah.
if you showed up 2 seconds late, what happened?
If you showed up 2 seconds late, you get a fraction of a point. There's a point system, like a demerit system, sort of like maybe you'd have for, you know, high schoolers or something. If you are just a few seconds late, you get a certain number of points. If you're an hour late, you get a different number of points. If you miss a day, you get a certain number of points. So you can only have 6 points before you get fired. And the reason that I know that lunch is 29 minutes and 59 seconds is because we were reminded and warned that if we didn't clock in past 30 minutes and 1 second, that was a point-earning infraction. That's the only reason that I retained that is because it was like, you know, it was a thing that you had to watch. So
What about the other side? Did you get overtime pay?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You do get overtime. I think that's the law in that. So we did get overtime, and so the schedule was 10.5-hour shifts, 5 days in a row, and then 2 days off.
And then you were given a productivity goal for each day's work. What was that, a specific number of pieces?
Yeah, it's a certain number of items that you have to be able to pick out of the bins. And it's, you know, it's like 1,350 items or, you know.
What happens if you fell short?
You get what they call counseled. And basically what that means is, you know, someone comes and tells you that you're doing a terrible job and why are you doing such a bad job and how could you start doing a better job. And, you know, all the people who worked there told me repeatedly, don't say that you're going as fast as you can, because if you say that you're going as fast as you can, you know, they'll fire you. So you have to say that you're trying your hardest and you will get better. So you just have to keep promising that you'll get better. And there are people who make their goals.
Did you ever?
No, I didn't. I think if I'd had more practice, maybe if I'd been working there for, you know, after maybe like a month, I probably would have hit my stride and gotten fast enough. But at the cost of, you know, I did another interview about this last week, and a caller who works at one of these warehouses, who I think he was in his 50s, said that his wife does this job, and she makes her numbers every day. And the host of the show asked him, you know, what does that do to your body? Like, is that sustainable? And the guy said, well, you know, I think your body will probably just shut down after probably a couple years at the most. So you can do it, but it definitely costs.
So how long were you there before you left? Did they fire you or did you quit?
I just walked. I actually had to, you know, I had other engagements. I had to go back to San Francisco to start a different assignment. And so by the time my drug test cleared, that delayed us a little bit, because it took them a week to determine that, you know, I was worthy to be doing this job. So I actually only ended up working like 37 hours or something.
Well, you just 37 hours, so that was 3 or 4 days.
Right, 4 days, yeah.
As you point out, you are fairly young. You say in the article that you're 31. But it seems that many of your coworkers were quite a bit older. How did they cope with these physical demands? I mean, you mentioned somebody saying that they can shut down, but I just cannot imagine running the length of this kind of place with constant pressure and not suffering. And then you say that there were some dangerous conditions. You write about one area of the place where you received a shock every time you touched a shelf.
Yeah, books. The books area is like torture.
Now, why was that? Why was there a shock when you touched books? I would have thought books would be one of the pleasanter places to go.
You know what? That's what I thought. The day that I was assigned to books, I was really excited. I was like, oh, it's just like being in a library, except I'm running really fast and it's really hard. So, you know, you don't reach the books first. You reach the shelf first. And all the shelves are made out of metal. And you're running fast in like rubber shoes on concrete. And there's electricity all over this place. You know, the conveyor belts are running. There's fans running. And it's cold. And books are dry, you know, because the paper, just the conditions are just sort of a perfect storm of, you know, of elements in order to make it as painful as possible, that every time you make contact with one of those shelves, it just shocks the hell out of you.
And did you mention this to your supervisor?
Yes, I did. Well, because on our first break, in addition to the 29-minute and 59-second lunch, there's 2 15-minute breaks. And so on the first one, you know, I ran up to the sort of help desk, and I was like, please tell me that there you have a solution. Like, what am I supposed to do to make this less terrible? And she was like, there's nothing you can do. We're sorry. I mean, everybody knows that that's the conditions. And we actually, you know, we fact check to death at the magazine. And so we FOIA'd some OSHA, you know, complaints from this warehouse. And it was a thing that people had filed before this, you know, that they were having this electric shock problem.
Well, but what happens with OSHA? Don't they inspect places like this?
Yeah, but there's no laws about electric shock. Mm-hmm. You know, I actually called OSHA at one point, because also a lot of these items are stored on the ground. These bins start literally on the floor, and then they go to like 7 feet high. So often as not, when you have to get a Barbie doll or whatever out of the bin, you have to get on the floor. You have to either crouch or kneel. And that happens, you know, 5, could be 800, 1,000 times a day is a lot of times to crouch or kneel. And so while I was doing that, I was thinking, how is this legal? So I called OSHA, and they said when it comes to ergonomics, there's no laws about ergonomics. There are best practices, and you can file complaints, and if you get injured and things like that, but there's no actual laws about that. So,
do you think the working conditions in a facility like this need to be so unpleasant? Is it just a matter of cutting down on cost?
Yes, it is just a matter of cutting down on cost. Because, I mean, like I said, warehouse jobs, is like, people have to do labor, and labor jobs are great. It's great that they exist, and it's great that these ones have to stay in the United States, you know, in order to get these goods to American consumers. But if you have super discounted items, you know, on the Internet, and then the shipping is free, and the company still posts hundreds of millions or billions of dollars of profits, that, you know, that money has to come from somewhere. So it gets squeezed in having temporary workers, you know, who have no job security and who have outrageous productivity goals. And there, you know, if there were more humans in that space, everyone wouldn't have to work as fast and at this sort of suicide pace that destroys their, you know, their body and things like that. They could also potentially, you know, make a little bit more money. It would affect the bottom line, certainly, those companies.
Does it matter whether there's a high unemployment rate or not? Because these companies existed before we went through our current problems. But I get the sense that that people don't want to complain or quit because they have no alternative. And if they do, there are many others out there who are all too willing to step into these jobs.
Well, that's exactly the problem, right? This is no time for organizing. I mean, these people can't strike because there are 15 other people for every single one of them that need that job. So you can't really demand better conditions under these circumstances. And one of the economists that I interviewed for the article was saying, you know, maybe awareness would be a good step in people sort of knowing where their stuff comes from and then, you know, putting pressure on the companies to do better. But in this economy, you know, in economies like this, that's not when you make these sort of labor practice changes that you would want to make. So he was not optimistic.
So what do you suggest that people like me do to change the situation? Should we just buy only from brick-and-mortar retailers?
I mean, you know, people are going to buy stuff on the Internet. Like, I buy stuff on the Internet. Everybody does. And that is definitely going to keep growing. I think that awareness about what that means, you know, what the conditions are, because you don't know. You didn't know, right? You just don't understand how they're doing it. And part of the reason that they're getting away with it is because nobody knows that that's what it looks like. If consumers, you know, put more demand for some sort of humane practice standard, you know, I was talking to an e-commerce specialist who actually hires 3PLs. And she said, you know, I hire 3PLs. I have no idea what these companies' practices are because we just hire the cheapest one. But there is a segment of the population that would pay more to know that, you know, some poor people weren't being practically tortured in the pursuit of this company's profit. You know, just like some people will pay more for organic food. So if a standard was created and then you would have the option to buy from companies that had better practices, I mean, I would patronize companies like that.
Well, we have seen pressure applied to companies like Apple, and we're probably going to see some changes in China in regard to the manufacturers of some of those products. Maybe something can be done here. By the way, on another point, a caller says that you could have avoided the shocks by stuffing your pockets with dryer sheets and not wearing any polyester.
I wasn't wearing any polyester, but that's funny. A whole bunch of people, I'm glad that you said that on the air, because a bunch of people emailed me after, and they were like, here are several ways. Like, also, you can, you know, you can tape, like, pencil lead to your finger. There are all sorts of, like, little tricks and things like that for avoiding that. So I hope some people who work in those warehouses just heard you say that.
And are all the warehouses similar? Have you visited any of the others?
Personally, I have only ever been in two, but the people who I worked with in this one said that they had worked in many. Some of them had actually traveled around the country working these jobs, you know.
You call them work campers.
Well, they call themselves work campers because they have their whole own culture where they, like, go around working temporary jobs and living in campers. So those people, you know, all said, actually, some of them were telling me, this one is actually a lot better than this one I worked in Missouri, you know. So just so you know, it could be worse.
I'll keep that in mind after WMIC gets rid of me and I'm looking for a job. Mac McClellan's article, Shelf Lives, My Brief Backbreaking Rage-Inducing Low-Paying Dildo Packing?
Yeah.
That was part of the fulfillment there. Inside the Online Shipping Machine is in the March-April 2012 issue of Mother Jones. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thanks for having me.